The machine gunner's dream of point-blank fire into serried masses of emus were soon dissipated. The emu command had evidently ordered guerrilla tactics, and its unwieldy army soon split up into innumerable small units that made use of the military equipment uneconomic. A crestfallen field force therefore withdrew from the combat area after about a month. Dominic Cerventi. My name is Becca Reiswig, and you're listening to So That's What Happened, a podcast where I share some of my favorite stories from our collective history. The topics covered will range from the inspirational and world-changing to the dark and just plain bizarre. We'll be doing flyby information dumps on things like, who was Amelia Earhart and what happened to her and her navigator? What does jazz music have to do with Nazi propaganda and espionage? What happened at Masada to give it its dark and mournful reputation? And what on earth was the Emu War? History is full of engaging and fascinating stories, whether we go back to the dawn of time or only a few years ago. So, settle in as we explore some of my favorites right here on So That's What Happened. On this, the third day of launch episodes, we look into the bizarre. Population control of native and invasive species of animals has been a difficult question for a very long time. Ecosystems are fragile, and overpopulation can have disastrous results, as can overculling those same animals. Balance is key in creating and sustaining a healthy habitat, regardless of who the inhabitants of said habitat are, particularly when non-native species are introduced. But what happens on the rare occasions that the military becomes involved? Well, in 1930s Australia, it resulted in the now infamous Great Emu War. Let's start our exploration into this oddity by first looking at the emu. Emus are large, flightless birds native to Australia with predominantly brown plumage. They are the second largest bird, right behind their African cousin, the ostrich. Our bird can reach almost 2 meters tall, that's over 6 feet in height, and can reach speeds of 30 miles per hour, which is actually about the max speed of humans as well. Emus are also omnivores, eating mostly plants and insects. These dinosaur-esque birds are pretty hardy and have practically no living natural predators, save for the dingo. This leads into part of where the problem comes from. According to the International Union for Conservation of Nature, emus are a least concerned species. This means their populations are not only stable but thriving at a rate which outmatches their predators. And in the 30s, this meant that they were considered a nuisance, or, more specifically, vermin. Okay, so they're large birds with a large population. How does this turn into something that the Australian military became involved in? Well, to understand that, we need to understand not only the birds themselves, but also the impact the emu had on Australian farmers, as well as the culture surrounding the incident. So let's look at the time period real quick. It's the 1930s. So World War I is over. The Great Depression is in its beginning stages. Soldiers returning from the war had needed jobs. By 1920, the government's plan to help with this was quickly falling apart. You see, they had thought farming would be the perfect solution, and had bought up tracts of land to give to the servicemen to raise sheep and to grow wheat on. The plan was perhaps overly ambitious because they were quickly forced to start acquiring and distributing land that wasn't exactly fit for farming. It's also worth noting that most of the soldiers had no farming experience and had this livelihood thrust upon them. Now they're attempting to learn how to be farmers and to cultivate the land in areas that are largely unusable. And then the Great Depression arrives, sweeping across the world in 1929. These farmers are encouraged to plant even more wheat and promise government subsidies for said crop. Except the only thing that happens is ever-decreasing wheat prices. Okay, so we now have over 5,000 former servicemen relying on these vastly devalued crops to provide for themselves and their families, meaning they have to sell an inordinately large amount of wheat to make ends meet. And this is where our flightless birds enter back into the story. Emus were everywhere, and they were obliterating entire fields, trampling the crop underfoot and eating stalks down to nothing. Despite the best efforts of the soldiers turned farmers, there are now over 20,000 giant birds destroying these farms. Attempts were made to control the population. The new farmers shot down as many birds as they could. Bounties were offered for emu beaks. But nothing seemed to really put a dent in the population growth. In perhaps one of the odder plot twists, the military is called in. In the Journal of Australian Studies, Murray Johnson suggests that it could have been a goodwill exercise on the part of the government. After failing to pay the subsidies they had promised war veterans, stepping into this situation in this aggressive of a manner could have been an attempt at proving they were trying to help the struggling farms. Regardless of why the military stepped in, they did, and in fact dispatched Major G.P.W. Meredith of the 7th Heavy Battery of the Royal Australian Artillery on November 2nd, 1932. The first engagement with the enemy occurred in the district of Kempong. The emus were 50 strong, the military forces flanked their avian enemies, and the birds responded with the less disciplined tactic of disorganized retreat, fleeing in all directions. The emu's attempt to minimize casualties was successful. After all was said and done, emu losses only numbered around a dozen. Regardless, as Johnson describes, the first blood in the bizarre emu war had thus been drawn by the Australian army. The emu forces continued to show themselves to be a crafty and hardy enemy. Only 2 days later, the next engagement took place. This time, the emus came in much larger numbers. 1,000 emus were sighted. Major Meredith organized his men into an ambush. Once the birds were at point-blank range, the order to fire was given. 10, maybe 12 emus were downed. And then the preposterous luck that seemed to follow the avians struck once more. The machine gun jammed. The birds scattered, snatching victory from what must have seemed like an inevitable defeat in the face of the superior firepower of the Australian army. A recruit was quoted as saying, "The emus have proved that they are not so stupid as they are usually considered to be. Each mob has its leader, always an enormous black-plumed bird standing fully 6 feet high, who keeps watch while his fellows busy themselves with the wheat. At the first suspicious sign, he gives the signal, and dozens of heads stretch up out of the crop. A few birds will take flight, starting a headlong stampede for the scrub, the leader always remaining until his fellows have reached safety." Upon the realization that the emus had superior scouts, Major Meredith made the tactical decision to engage the birds at speed. A chuck was outfitted with a mounted machine gun. However, it was quickly discovered that the modified vehicle could not keep pace with the birds, and the gunner could not properly aim at the emus while moving. One particular emu made a valiant sacrifice for his fellow birds. Upon being killed, the corpse became jammed in the vehicle's steering equipment, further hindering the army's disastrous pursuit of the emus. On November 8, 1932, a mere week after setting out, the Australian army was ordered to retreat. The emus had won the campaign. According to Johnson, it was reported that Major Meredith's party had used 2,500 rounds of ammunition, 25% of the allotted total, to destroy 200 emus. Major Meredith took a few days to plan his next move. He mounted his second campaign on November 13th. Slowly, he began cutting away at the emu numbers, and after over a month of near-constant warfare, he announced that each week they were able to kill roughly 100 emus. However, the kill-to-ammo ratio was abysmal. Major Meredith and his forces were recalled, and the Great Emu War was brought to a close. Johnson further states that, when one New South Wales state Labour politician inquired whether a medal was to be struck for those taking part in this war, his federal counterpart in Western Australia responded that they should rightly go to the emus, who have won every round so far. Indeed, even by the end of the war, it was fair to say that despite no losses on the army's side, the emus did indeed emerge victorious. After their defeat at the claws of the emus, the Australian government decided that the best course of action was not official military response, but instead a more mercenary approach. Those who had first called for help, the farmers, who were being directly impacted by the emus, were given the necessary ammunition to handle the problem themselves, as well as more bounties being placed on the flightless giants. Over 50,000 emus were killed over the span of 6 months in 1934. Exclusion barrier fencing, fences built with the express purpose of keeping a specific species out, became a popular deterrent in the 1930s. Presently, as stated at the beginning, emus are considered as a least concern species. Most reports place their population between 600,000 and 700,000, with some reports claiming more than the 700,000. As humans expand across the Australian wilderness, some populations of emus are finding themselves at risk of local extinction. Efforts are being made by conservationists to preserve these populations and perhaps find ways for humans and emu kind to live in harmony. So, that's what happened. For the sake of Australians' pride, let's all hope that the emus don't decide to instigate a second war. If you'd like to read up on the Great Emu War for yourself, Feathered Foes, Soldier Settlers, and Western Australia's Emu War of 1932, Johnson Murray's article from the Journal of Australian Studies, is the most comprehensive recording of what exactly happened that I was able to find. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider rating and reviewing it as well as subscribing. And if you'd like to directly support me, you can click on the link in the show notes or head over to patreon.com/sothatswhathappened. I'm still figuring out what additional content to make available to patrons, so if you have any ideas about that, topics you'd like to hear me cover, or questions or comments about this episode or previous episodes, send an email to sothatswhathappenedpodcast@gmail.com. You can also find me over on Instagram and Twitter as stwhpodcast. If we had a military division with the bullet-carrying capacity of these birds, it would face any army in the world. They could face machine guns with the invulnerability of tanks. Major Meredith.